for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
What's up, everybody? What a great, great week for soccer. What a really cool setup we had all weekend with MLS Cup, the Premier League, the Neville was going up against Barcelona. It was a really cool week altogether, and I was in San Diego, so I missed some of the high points with the NPSL owners meetings, which was really cool. Got to hear Warren Barton talk, the social media, learned a lot of stuff on social media, actually, from the guy who runs it for the LA Galaxy. And it was a really cool weekend. We'll talk about that at length a little later. I definitely want to get in the Premier League. I'm wearing my Bournemouth Cherries pin that I got at BlazerCon. An incredibly... I've never seen a smash and grab anything quite like that in soccer. That is the most surprising 1-0 win I've ever seen. I thought Chelsea was absolutely dominant, but we'll get into all of that later. Premier League, NPSL, the College Cup. We have two Western New Yorkers going into the Final Four, and they could match up in the final, which is which is the coolest part about it. I think on one end it's far less likely than the other, but Syracuse has a chance at winning the national championship. So does Akron, but Stanford looks just incredible. All those things on the docket. We're going to talk to Drew Maloney, a Timbers Army member.
He was there last
who was at MLS Cup yesterday. But let's begin with the game itself. Just I do not think it was the finest moment for MLS.
No.
At all. So on one hand, I love it, and these games happen. We've had bad Super Bowls. We've had sweeps in the World Series or the NBA or the NHL. So this doesn't make MLS bad because I didn't like the game. But two terrible goals, and the third one arguably should have been blown dead before it even happened. So that, you know, for MLS, who has broken into so many different countries this year, and maybe people are like, all right, it's the final, I'll watch it. Maybe not its best day.
No, absolutely not. And even to the supporters, after Portland scores their second goal, you see beer bottles raining down.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's maybe it has a touch of European to it. I don't know. But, like, there's just not... I thought that was pretty classless, but...
Was not a good look, no.
And the goals weren't good goals. You
the first goal was horrendous.
Yeah, and the headed goal was nice, Portland's second goal.
Yeah, Ronnie Wallace.
But the whole out-of-bounds situation where the ball... Somebody tweeted today that the ball was a yard out of bounds.
Yeah.
Which is like 3 feet and more.
It was really poor, and it was very difficult for me, ironically. On Sunday, we had the annual referees...
Oh,
you know, here's what we're going to be enforcing, and here's what we need to see from your team. And, hey, did you guys really get 7 red cards that this year? I was like, 6 were from one ref, and we hope we never see him again. But, yeah, so to have that and then watch the game, that it set off all these bells and whistles while I was watching the MLS Cup. Like, well, look, doesn't this go both ways? Very poorly done. Good referee, usually, too, and I always say his name wrong, and Marufo.
Yeah,
he usually does a good job, so that was surprising. And granted, that was one call, and it was a call that the AR probably has to catch.
The problem with having the technology that we do and being able to look back at replays is you could just take a screen grab and see what the AR was looking at when the ball was out of bounds. And
right.
His attention wasn't even paid at all to where the ball was. So it's going to be really difficult for him not to get banned or at least get suspended or something like that, because I know that you're kind of sympathetic to ARs because you've seen those offside videos.
Yeah.
And it's difficult, but I think
I'm not at that level. A championship game, that's your best crew.
And this is an out-of-bounds call, too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not something you should miss.
It's not a ticky-tack foul or a did he or didn't he, and was it embellished? And Tony Chani literally just stops. He literally just stops. Like, well, I know it wouldn't normally be my job to break this play up, but that ball is clearly out of bounds.
Yeah.
And it goes on. So that was extremely frustrating to me. And, you know, that goal was a nice goal, but the other two... You know, we really didn't get it. We really didn't get that moment. The moment gets to be about Steve Clark, and then that sort of goalkeeping fraternity. It's almost like Quarase was like, you know what? let me give this right back to you. Let's not hang out to dry. It's 2-1, or it's 2-0. I'll let you have this one, so it won't be about you. It'll be about a really good goal by Wallace.
Clark's was way worse. The gaffe, yeah. 30 seconds in, and he handled it, I thought, with some class after the match. You know, he took responsibility shortly after the goal happened. Like, you know, I think after the game, he patted his chest as like saying, "My bad."
You know?
And I respect that. Kourassi's was a little bit more difficult.
He's got to either punch that or catch it, mm-hmm. and he gets there first, and his hands are up high.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those goals. A lot of times, because I spent a decent amount of time with FC Buffalo and Canisius keeper Andrew Coughlin and UB and FC Buffalo keeper Cam Hogg, and they'll talk to you about keeping. They're happy to discuss when a guy does something wrong or how he does something right or wrong. And both of them, in my head, I don't think are bailing him out. And both would be willing to bail out a goalie, but you go up and he goes up to punch it and kind of lets it hit his fists.
I would love to hear Cam Hogg talk about that at length.
Like, yeah. He would, too. Just call him.
Yeah.
He's ready. He's ready to do it right now.
3 minutes with Cam Hogg. He would bring the intensity, no doubt.
So, you know, moving on, we had a preview on Pro Soccer Talk, where I work, NBC Sports, and one of the things they asked us is this matchup good or bad for MLS, and this was before the game. And I thought it was a good matchup in that two really good fan bases. You knew Timbers Army were going to travel really well, and you should have seen an exciting game. Now, that didn't pan out, but look, sometimes it doesn't pan out between Liverpool and Arsenal or in a Milan derby. So to me, I'm not going to, or often in a Milan derby, because Serie A has been brutal lately. But, you know, I was not disappointed by that. The Red Bulls and the Galaxy could have played a game like that. This is just kind of where we're at with Major League Soccer. When those stinkers come in, compared to a stinker from overseas or even the CONCACAF Champions League, it's gonna look stinkier. There's gonna be more of a smell to it.
I have a theory, or maybe it's sort of a theory, but also as a question to you. Greg Berhalter got outcoached.
Yeah, you know what? This is amazing. We spoke about this last week. Caleb Porter, just printed his check for the rest of his life. Now, like, he kind of did that at Akron,
yeah,
in bringing that program to the next level. But he goes to the U.S. Olympic team, doesn't even get them to the Olympics, which it may turn out to be a regular thing. We'll find out in a couple months against Colombia.
It's terrifying. Yeah.
But I thought he goes to the Timbers. They, I believe, in the number one seed in the West, his first year on a almost record amount of tied games. But he's a man who knows how to get that point. Last year, they missed the playoffs. This year, they almost missed the playoffs. But what parity being what it is in MLS, that guy, and I do wonder what MLS has done. What's he thinking right now? Because if I'm him, I'm thinking Bob Bradley waited until he was in his late 50s to go to a national team, or to go, well, away from the United States, mm-hmm. to Egypt. And then now he's obviously in France, but he started in Norway as well. I would love to see, and it's funny, I'm not a huge fan of his at all. I wouldn't even say I'm a fan. But I'd like to see him try his luck somewhere else.
I think he needs to win another one first.
Yeah.
But I think it was more of an indictment on Berhalter than it was a really great success story for Porter. I think Porter did a very good job, but it just didn't look like Columbus was ready to play, like mentally, you know? The guys who'd had very strong years until that point, I mean, awful, Will Trapp, Tony Chani, Steve Clark, none of those guys were mentally in it in the first 15 right. minutes, and it cost him, you know, down the stretch. And I think that's on Greg Berhalter. I mean, those guys need to be ready. They need to be focused. Some of it's on them too, obviously, but it reflects very poorly upon a coach.
I do think that's fair, but I also want to point to what we spoke about last week with Portland and Columbus, or with Portland's center backs and their defense. And I thought if Columbus was going to win, which I thought they would by a couple goals, mm-hmm. I thought they would break through in terms of messing with Liam Ridgewell or whoever was going to be out there. And what we saw from Portland was just a fairly stout performance at the back. I wouldn't necessarily say, and the men standing in front of them as well.
Yeah.
But I didn't walk away from the game thinking, wow, Portland did a job there. I thought Columbus kind of tossed it away.
We could ask Drew Maloney this when he comes on as a guest in a couple minutes, but Diego Valeri being the MVP, I don't necessarily agree with that. I realize he had a very good playoffs, but I thought Nat Borchers probably deserved it more.
Sure.
He had a crucial block, but he really shored up that one area, as you just said, that people were worried about. And his presence allowed Paparotto to be, you know, a peripheral figure. And Ridgewell and Borchers together, tough, physical, win a lot of tackles, get in front of shots. They're not flashy. They're not great with the ball at their feet. But they were tough enough, you know, to deal with Kai Kamara, and that's no easy task.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Borchers, to me, you're never going to – you have to be a defender who scores to get real respect from the voters in MLS. Mm-hmm. You know, Kendall, with the exception of this year's best 11, which they set up as like a 3-4-3 or something like that, with guys like Matt Hedges from DC and Kendall Waston, those guys will get on a team where there's a slot for defenders.
Yeah.
Waston was the best player on Vancouver.
You really like
him.
I
love
him. Yeah, it's...
I love him. I think he's. I think Hedges is too, and not just because he's from Rochester.
Nick's blushing right now.
I'm blushing. I just adore him. Yeah. I have I have his face tattooed
maybe
on my chest.
Maybe it's your tan from San Diego.
But I remember there being a big argument for Chad Marshall being MLS MVP a couple years ago when he had that resurgence with Seattle, and that didn't come to pass. And I think it didn't come to pass just because the same reason when we're scouting, it's easier to scout goal scorers and attackers. Yeah. Oh, he had 9 goals. Yeah, but their center back was really good. Yeah, but he had 4 shots on goal. Because we don't have advanced stats in front of us all the time when you pull up a stats page. So that I like that. I like that call of Borchers. Otherwise, I don't know that there was one standout player in the game, period.
Agreed.
For either team,
Because it was that ugly. And
it was.
I was looking through some match ratings, which I still have a, you know, I really enjoy reading those to see what other people, how they would grade players.
Right.
And I thought some of them were unduly harsh. Like, I thought Gonzalo Higuain had a decent game. I thought at the very end it was he who was finding open spaces, was trying to start attacks. And there wasn't that kind of ambition and that kind of urgency coming from a lot of those other Columbus players, especially Kai Kamara, you know?
Yeah.
Kai Kamara spent a lot of time on the ground, a lot of time complaining. I don't know how healthy he was. I know he picked up that knock on Saturday night before the final, and then not much more was said of that, and it didn't seem like he was affected by it too much physically, but again, he just seemed mentally out of it, much like all of Columbus's stars were.
Didn't you bring up, though, I want to say it was you last week, who talked about that Columbus didn't look like they had the best chemistry at all times on the field, that they were prone to kind of getting after each other and being a little nasty. And I'm not just talking about the ostentatious display in the last round where there was almost a fight.
The Chani Kamara.
Yeah, but that is, you know, that's an issue. And that might be an issue of the top-down Berhalter thing, because I think he kind of has that kind of snarl to him when you look at him. But he established himself in a really good spot this year. I wonder if they'll be the favorite again. And usually you see that. There's a media moment where they just latch on to the two teams that won and say, there'll be some column somewhere, what are the odds it isn't these two guys again? And I, not just because it's MLS, I would almost bet it won't be, barring a remarkable flip in roster from both teams. Columbus probably has, which I'll leave it this way, out of the two teams that are left, that remained at the end, which team would you say has a... Let's not even say of going to the MLS Cup final. Which one would you give a better chance of making a run at number one? As a supporter's shield, not in conference.
Of those two teams that played yesterday, I would probably say Columbus. And I only say that because they're a better balanced team, and I think they're a more talented team. And I think chemistry is something that you can work out. I'm not saying it's easy to work out, but I think it can be improved upon. I'm not saying that's the only reason why Columbus fell short, but I just think they're a more talented team. I don't see too many holes. I think Will Trapp will get better. He's young. I think Chani will get better. He's young. Kai Kamara, he's getting a little bit older, but I feel like the urgency for him to, you know, win a championship, something that's eluded him and eluded him and eluded him. There was that picture on one of the images shared on Twitter last night was Kai Kamara was the final Columbus Crew player remaining on the field, and it was just like a little pile of Kai Kamara, and you could see it from far away, and it was sort of sad to see, you know. And as much whining and as complaining as he did yesterday, you feel for a guy who's come so close, and then you're like, well, you gotta go through this whole grueling season again, and you gotta, you know, battle against really nasty center backs and try to get back to where you were a year from now. And that's probably difficult, I think, for Kai Kamara to swallow now. So,
well,
I think he'll be hungry.
And I think that's true. And I've also been impressed, if you ask me to pick a team that I've been impressed by their youth setup and which guys have come up either through homegrown or in their draft, Columbus does a really nice job there. And I wanted to pull up the number outside of Romain Gall, who is a U23 team and possible Olympian and isn't even really playing mm-hmm. for Columbus. They have some depth. There were guys who didn't play yesterday. I know Gall is on the actual roster, but they guys who didn't play yesterday who are possible, real good players in the league. And I just found this out. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. My longtime favorite MLS player and U.S. player, Josh Wolf, is an assistant coach on the Crew. So now ooh. I'm just stung for Josh.
I'm less of a Josh Wolf guy.
I loved Wolf, and then after him, my favorite player was Carlos Bocanegra. And if you made me pick now, I'd probably still have to go with Bradley.
I'd take Boca.
Boca's. I a friend of mine gave me an autographed Boca jersey. It's just waiting for framing. So yeah, he's one of my favorite players. I translated his name for fantasy football reasons for a long time. My team was always called Charlie Blackmouth. So. That's a big part for me. In MLS moving forward, I'll tell you what, I have to wonder, going to BlazerCon, I remember hearing the MLS panel where they talked about what's the owners. It was not Robert, Jonathan Kraft, and also the owner of the Sounders and of Orlando. And what's the number one thing they asked in 20 years or in 10 years? What do you see in this league? And they want to be allowed to pay their players top to bottom more. They want to be able to match what Liga MX does.
That's what Don Garber said right. last night, though, that they're doing better.
Right. And once they reach Liga MX numbers, I'll be very interested outside of Club America, just because of the attraction of coming to the United States, whether the U.S. won't get a lot more Mexican stars as well. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a real challenge. When those salaries go up, the big complaint you'll hear, and I guarantee it's going to come from Taylor Twellman, it's going to come from Alexi Lalas, it's going to come from Landon Donovan, is where are the spots on the MLS rosters for American players? How are we developing them?
I was making that argument.
Yeah.
And you had a good counter to that as well, though. So,
well, it's interesting, right? Yeah. I mean, we still are a gigantic country playing the world's most popular sport. And without getting too ridiculous, when MLS reaches its pinnacle and it gets to that point where guys are being left off of rosters who are very talented. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll go to Europe. I'm hoping there's a trickle down that whether it be NASL, which I would think is far more likely, that players will go to that team. I heard there's a loose relationship between the NASL and our league, the mm-hmm. NPSL.
Yeah.
And at the owners' meetings this year, there was a speech from Giovanni Savarese, former Metro Stars player. They weren't Red Bulls yet, mm-hmm. And Swansea City as well. And one of the things he spoke about was that when they go for a player, they want to bring in a guy who is competing with MLS, not competing against them. And of course, that's lofty. And of course, he has to say that. But you're more likely to see that at the NASL level right now. You know, to see the Cosmos, they've been linked with a lot of former guys you would say, oh, retirement league. Yeah. And so I just think those leagues will get stronger and the soccer from top to bottom will get stronger and the USL will get stronger. So I think it won't be great for the U.S. men's national team development,
yeah.
but the American players as a whole, I think it will be good for.
I think the foreign involvement still needs to be limited.
Yeah.
I think the reason that you see a lot of players, and I'll just use England for an example, the Ross Barkleys, the Walcotts, Theo Walcotts, those guys just don't really happen in the U.S. You know, other than Julian Green, you don't really see a whole lot of teenagers making an impact in the U.S. national team. And a lot of it's because they're not playing at the highest level when they're that young. So
right.
as long as we can deal with players hitting their peak as far as, you know, playing at a high level regularly for their club and working their way into the national team, with those people being ages like 24 and 25 instead of 20 and not having them for quite as long as maybe England does.
Yeah, but Ben, I think the pressure is on the MLS Academy setup and the USDA Academy setup, because Ross Barkley also at age 16 is playing in a U18 team that would, and I didn't check how like the Milk Cup down in the Texaco Cup, I don't know what they're calling it. I didn't see how that went because a lot of big time English and European youth teams come over and take on American sides.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think aside from the biggest teams, you're not seeing the pure development yet. And that's the one thing I think Jurgen Klinsmann can still hang his hat on, is it does seem like it's making strides. Maybe the U.S. men's national team isn't doing what it is, but whether it be a Jordan Morris or these wealth of homegrowns that we're seeing in MLS, it does seem better there.
And the success of the, just, and this is sort of anecdotal, but teams like the New York Red Bulls Academy and the players that they're producing that you see sprinkled you know, all around the nation, I see a lot of hope coming from the academies. And maybe in order to compete with those, it's the clubs in the NPSL and the PDL and so forth that has to keep up with those.
Absolutely.
And it raises the standard there too. So I can see that as being a good thing. And I'm a little worried about talent getting diluted. I feel like the expansion plans are sometimes money driven, and in a lot of cases money driven.
Oh, always money driven. But again, if it's top to bottom going to pay more, and we're talking strictly about MLS here, if it's top to bottom going to pay more and guys, that's what we talk about. Maybe in your starting 11, it's still comparable to Liga MX. Mm-hmm. But if it's starting every guy in the 18 or every guy on the roster, it'll be much better. We're going to go on to the phones now. We have a guest, a local Buffalonian, if you will, big time in the very active in the soccer community. Drew Maloney is also a member of Timbers Army, and he is fresh back from Columbus, where he went to see his beloved Timbers take on Columbus Crew in MLS Cup. Drew, how's it going, man?
It's going well. It's going well. How are you?
We're doing pretty well, Drew. This is Ben here. I just want you to talk about that experience that you went through yesterday. I was following quite a bit of it on social media, and it just seemed to be, you know, something you dream of as far as being a soccer fan, is being a part of a supporters group on a day that they win the championship. Can you just walk us through what your day was like?
Oh, it was pretty unbelievable. Even getting down there, like getting the ticket, I had to enter a raffle. They were raffling off an opportunity to buy tickets, and there were 27 tickets, and over 1,000 people entered. I was lucky enough to be one of those 27.
Wow.
I was sitting right in the Timbers Army. You know, on Saturday night we all went out to a bar together. For a little pregame party, and then there was a huge, gigantic tailgate. It was pretty unbelievable to see how many people, you know, came from Portland, and you know, they were lifelong supporters even when the team was, you know, NASL and USL, and you know, to be there with those guys when they. Watching them win and finally, you know, seeing everything pay off was pretty amazing.
The stadium itself is, I've been there for a Crew game. I've also been there for a U.S. men's national team game. And for a game of that atmosphere, it's like just big enough to get insane, but it's also just small enough that there's a real sort of,
Intimacy.
Yeah, that's a good term there. What did you make of the actual game day experience in the stadium there at MAPFRE?
I thought it was great. It was very well organized. You know, everyone was real nice there to us. Even the even Crew supporters were, you know, no one was being jerks or anything.
No one threw any bottles at you?
No one threw any bottles at me, which was nice. That was solid. I had a really good experience. All the employees, you know, there were great. It might have all actually been terrible, but I was so happy that everything was great.
Right.
No matter what anyone did or said to me, it's hard to put into words how truly amazing it was.
As far as talking about the MLS supporters culture, what sort of drew you into it? What drew you into being a Timbers fan? I guess, how did this all come about? Because it's definitely a niche group, but it can be pretty cool when you're a part of it.
Yeah, I wanted to get in. I would casually watch MLS, but I never really, you know, followed one team. And then, when Portland joined the league, Portland, the city, is kind of like Buffalo, and the green and gold, you know, me being a time and alum, naturally drawn to green and gold. One of my buddies was a big fan of them too. So we just kind of started hanging out. And watching the games at MSK, and then one of our other buddies, Ray, who just moved here from Portland, from Texas, and then he did some time in Portland too. Him and his girlfriend came down to the game with us, so now we have a little group of guys here.
A small army, you could say.
Yes, you could call it a small army. Drew, I want to thank you. You did bring your FC Buffalo scarf and took your picture with, and that meant it meant a lot to us. We almost felt a little bit of a part of it. How do you feel when you when you're in the stadium, right, and a goal goes in 27 seconds in, we've all been at a sporting event like that, but of that magnitude, to have something that crazy happen, and it's not like you could have necessarily, it's not one of those goals 30 seconds into a game where there's a playoff to kick off, and you feel it building, and you're like, wow, we might score early. It was, what is the goalie doing? Oh my Lord, we're winning the championship. What was that feeling like?
There was like a half second right when it went in where everyone just kind of looked at each other.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute, what, did that really go in? We were looking for flags, looking for a whistle, and then none of that came, and we just went ballistic.
And then the second goal, obviously, as well, that had to be just euphoria, but there was a bit of I don't want to say holding on, because it wasn't that sort of game where a team was holding on for the win, but did you did you feel the, was there the intensity rising as it went on? Was it the same? How was it for a fan instead of a neutral? Because to me, I'm not looking thinking, man, I hope one of these teams win. I'm like, let's have a great game. For someone who was into it, how did that play out?
It was, I was definitely nervous. You know, with goals, they got too quick. You know, the Timbers got two quick goals. And then, you know, 18 in, Columbus gets one back. And I'm like, oh, geez, here we go. Maybe, you know, they're starting to get kind of momentum, if you believe in that. So then as the game went on, they didn't really have, I don't think Columbus had too many amazing opportunities. I actually think they only got one shot at that, if I recall it was their goal. But they threatened a few times, but it was nothing like super crazy. But, you know, you always get nervous when you have the lead, like when your team has the lead. You're almost expecting it to, like, this can't be real. They can't be about to win.
Mm-hmm.
Drew, did you get to meet Timber Joey?
I didn't meet Timber Joey. I did meet Timber Jim. Like the former Timbers Joey.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting next to him actually in the Army. I somehow ratted my way down to the first row.
That's not surprising.
It shouldn't surprise anyone. I was in the first row and I hugged him when we won. So
well,
that was pretty cool.
I am pleased. We are unfortunately about to hit a commercial break, but here's what I'm really, really, really pleased about, Drew. It's that what I thought might have happened was that everyone would have brought their own chainsaw and then just every tree outside the stadium getting carved up afterwards. So I'm proud of you for not doing that. But
yeah, it was we were in control. You know, the party was great. The bar that posted it was super awesome, and they played "We Are the Champions," and the entire bar was singing. It was special.
Yeah. Unforgettable, to be sure. Drew, thanks so much for checking in with us. We're awesome to kind of follow it from a Buffalonian heading down there, and hopefully more championships to come.
No problem. Thanks a lot, guys. Always good to catch up with you.
Anytime. Drew Maloney, Timbers Army, and what's his position at Boomslang in the BDSL?
I believe he runs the team.
The general manager?
You can follow him on Twitter at DJ Rue
You. You could. You could certainly do that.
I'm not going to spell that out. You can look it up.
Yeah, you can look up.
Yeah,
a little bit of banter there.
Yeah, agreed.
Be prepared for some saltiness. Maybe a little pepper, too. We're going to take a break. Excited. We're going to get back on the other end. We'll talk about the NPSL convention. We'll talk about the Premier League. Maybe we'll even flip it that way, because there are some things that I want to discuss about what went on in England. And additionally, we got to get into the College Cup and two Western New Yorkers playing in the Final Four of the NCAA. We'll be back in a minute on WBNY. Nick Mendola here along with Ben Tsujimoto on the Football Club of Buffalo show. Couple in-house things to clear up. One, you should check out Ben at BN_soccer. He is the curator.
That's on Twitter, yeah.
On the Buffalo Soccer blog. It's also soccer.buffnews or Buffalo News?
Buffalo News.
Soccer.buffalonews.com. That's how old I am. I remember when the emails had Buff News.
They still are.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, Derek.
Don't confuse our listeners.
I'll never confuse anyone. That's not true.
I'm already confused. So it's too late.
He's Derek. He's our fine producer, and he'll help us get this show online later in case you missed something or you're just tuning in now on your ride home from work. We got a lot of stuff we got to get to. College Cup, the Barclays Premier League had some really good games this weekend. Maybe even get to a quick mention of Barcelona, and certainly FC Buffalo has some news, if you will, or just some things to announce from our league owners meetings, which I just got back from in San Diego. So a really, really packed half hour here, so let's not waste any more time. We'll start with the College Cup. So we have two Western New Yorkers, Ben, who are in the Final Four. So, of course, being Western New Yorkers, we can expect them either to not meet or to lose horrifically in the final. But let's not jinx things. Let's start with the first game. Liam Callahan, sweet home grad, Played a year for FC Buffalo. Played a long time for Syracuse. Transferred from Villanova, was on the show last week. He'll get a chance to, what do we call it, the rubber match against Clemson. A very, very good Clemson team for the right to go to the national championship game. Syracuse, there might, I think it would be between maybe them and Stanford for who's coming into this tournament hotter. And they've looked very, very good. And Liam has been arguably their most important player of the tournament. Again, I think another assist.
Off a corner kick.
Yes. Yeah, he was given the assist there. So, man, kid's playing out of his mind. He's playing very well. And I don't even want to say out of his mind because it's more of the evolution of a player. I think he has a legitimate chance to be a national champion. I mean, outside of the fact that anyone in the Final Four does. I think Syracuse will be favored to win this game. And I'd also be interested to see, should they win a national championship, what it would do for Syracuse soccer. Being in the ACC was obviously their biggest move, but to have that under their belt would be unbelievable. But let's stick with this game. Do you feel like Syracuse should come out? Are they the favorite?
Well, they've split two this year, as you said, this being the rubber match. They lost.
Both lost at home.
At home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Syracuse losing 1-0 during the regular season, and then the Cuse coming, or the Orange coming back and winning over Clemson 2-0 in the ACC tournament en route to winning. I think that ACC games are really a toss-up, especially when it comes to the postseason. And I don't see this being a whole lot different. I don't see it being like the ACC tournament game. I see something that's really tight throughout. I see them probably going to extra time. I think Syracuse's attack, though, is playing so well right now.
Oh, yeah.
And some of that's just, I mean, it's easy to point to Liam Callahan getting moved up from his outside back role to more of a true attacking winger role, which is interesting and not a very simple transition, I think, to make in the middle of the postseason, nonetheless, as well. And at the same time, Syracuse is building really well from the wings. It seems like on every single highlight tape after each of these NCAA tournament and ACC tournament games that Callahan's swinging balls in like crazy. He's taking all their set pieces. He's just so involved, and it's such a gift to be able to be a good crosser. You know, you look at the EPL, guys like Navas and Walcott and guys who wish they could cross the ball accurately like that. It's a skill that I think is underrated, and Liam Callahan can definitely serve a good ball. The goal that Syracuse scored was off a set piece. Callahan bends a corner in, and he finds Ben Polk at the back post, and he knotted it in. But it was a great ball. It was far enough away from the keeper. It was bending, so it was hard for the defense to judge. It was easier for Polk to get his head on it when it's sort of just bending in his direction. It was a terrific ball, and it was not an easy finish, but it was good to see Callahan being involved like that and just being on the ball a ton. It's weird because he's a Western New Yorker, you know, and we're just not accustomed to seeing players from Section 6 playing at huge schools in big situations like this. So it's still kind of have to shake your head and sometimes be like, wow.
Yeah, and I wonder who – I think there's a bit of hard to predict here because Clemson coach Noonan and John McIntyre at Syracuse both kind of doing this dance for the first time in terms of ACC teams this deep into the tournament. Mm-hmm. And it'll be really interesting to see which I don't know a ton about Clemson, but I know with Syracuse, he's going to come out and he's going to play his game. He's going to set up his team to succeed, and they're going to play similar, I think, to the way they play. I wouldn't expect any frills. But I wonder with Clemson, given that he's coming off the loss on the back end, right? So Clemson beats Syracuse earlier, and I think there's something to that, but Syracuse can already feel like it exercised that demon. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a danger in overconfidence as well.
Right.
But I think the edge, when you're splitting this, when you're having this so-called rubber match, I'm going to put that edge in the corner of the team that won last. And I think that's a big thing. Over on the other side, Akron with Azana Kase from
IPrep.
But yeah, is he trying to remember where he's from?
Eritrea,
yeah.
Yep.
And he's kind of there. You had a great write up on him on the Buffalo News soccer blog. He's kind of there, come in there and make life miserable guy late.
He's kind
in the
of
game.
A closer.
Yeah,
I see him as a John Rocker.
A bit of that. He should have his own warm up music.
Uh-huh.
You know that they play that song like subbing into the game and he gets it special. But he'll go up against the Stanford team, and if he has to close it out, he'll be likely trying to close out Jordan Morris, who is playing. He's playing like a guy who's been called up to the U.S. men's national team, you know, and he's playing like a guy who's scored against Mexico and is now in the college tournament. I think Stanford are heavy favorites here. Brandon Vincent is also a major professional prospect.
He was very good against Wake Forest. I saw the end of that Wake Forest game. It was very entertaining, but it wasn't Jordan Morris in the end. It was Morris who got them on the board early, and that really helped
right.
because Wake Forest was having to chase the game. But it was Brandon Vincent.
He's fantastic.
It was a handful of other players that were making a difference in the midfield that were battling with Ian Harks and with Jack Harrison as well. And I thought coming in, I hadn't seen Stanford yet, so I thought I was expecting a Jordan Morris one man show, and it wasn't that at all.
No.
Like, it's a very balanced team.
Well, that conference is unbelievable, and it's only a 6-team conference, so you don't necessarily see them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You see them when they're playing other teams, but I have a very good feeling. And I could be wrong. Again, it could just be a year for people connected to Caleb Porter or connected to Akron.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be interested in monitoring when that game comes around, Ben, is, you know, guys like Vincent, guys like Morris. I know for people in the MAC who have watched Akron play, names like Richie Liria and Adam Najem, those names pop out at you. I don't think that caliber. I think Stanford has the better players here. I mean, if you're lining up 1 through 6,
yeah.
I think they've got 1, 2, and maybe 3. So that's what I worry about for Akron. They don't have that guy they've had in years past that you're gonna tell them we're gonna ride on this. And Stanford has a couple guys they could do that with if they had to.
You don't think Akron has that?
I think
Adam Najem is that.
Oh, I love him. I think he's their best player. I think he's fantastic. I think he's got a good career ahead of him.
He's clutch. Do you see this?
Yeah.
The free kick that Akron won on?
Wow. Yeah.
It takes some special skills in that situation to be able to bend the ball over the wall into the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly they have that in the conference as well. A couple guys, obviously UB, we know Russell Ciceroni, and the kid Ryan James can do the thing at BG
yeah.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have the... They're probably the team I'd least expect to come out and win it, win the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they have that in it. That said, they've shown it. I mean, they beat the tar out of Rutgers in the tournament, 6-1, I believe, was the final score.
And they've played good schools this year. They've played Wake Forest. They've
right, it's
Georgetown.
Almost better for them because they haven't really in the tournament. I mean,
mm-hmm.
not that they have everybody in the tournament is good.
Right,
I'm not
yeah.
taking that away from anyone. But during the season, they played everybody. They really challenged themselves. So I believe their run up is Creighton, very good team. But Creighton, I think it was Drake, Rutgers, and Drake was the first round. So I'm probably missing one win in there. No, I'm not, because
no,
it's
not
a 64 yep. team tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see Stanford and Syracuse. I really do, and that'll be even aesthetically a fun match to watch.
That'll be Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
Yep, December 13th.
Really looking forward to that in Kansas.
Kansas City, Kansas.
Kansas
yeah.
City, Kansas.
Not Kansas City, Missouri. I had to look that up. I forgot there were two Kansas Cities for a second. Kind of embarrassing.
It's easy to forget that, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, the Chiefs play in Missouri, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yeah, they
yeah.
do, yeah. Kansas City, Kansas is the one spoken about less frequently.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they get for calling it Kansas City. If New York City was in Pennsylvania, that'd be a real problem, I think.
Yeah, it's like the Jets and the Giants playing in New Jersey.
I did complete one-off comment here, non sequitur, but and I'm good at that. Or bad at that, however you want to say it.
I'd say good at it.
On the flight home from San Diego yesterday, I flew over. They have the on American Airlines, you can make a 3D view so you can see what you're flying over. So
mm-hmm.
you look out the window like, ooh, what's that lake?
Yeah.
I flew over something in America I didn't know we have, which is the chocolate mountains.
Ooh.
They were not made of chocolate. Of
course.
That's disappointing.
How do you know?
I don't know. Right. That's a good point.
mm-hmm.
That is a good point. I do not have personal firsthand, but I feel like we would have heard about them.
Do they
now.
Look like dark chocolate or milk chocolate?
They looked like mountains.
Oh.
No, that was... it was surprising, and yet it shouldn't have been at all. So moving on, we'll get into the NPSL thing, and then we'll save Premier League for the final 5-10 minutes of the show. But maybe we won't have to, because I was there all weekend. I'm asking you, what do you want to know? Obviously, all the owners. There's owners from every team there. The chairman, Joe Baroni, was there. New managing director, Jeff. I'm very excited about him.
TIFO? Is
yeah.
that how you say it? Is it like T-I-F-O, TIFO?
I'm not positive because he says it's not... I think he's told me it wasn't French. We had a...
It's not default, is it?
I do not believe so.
Okay.
Actually, I think it is.
Oh.
No. I'm embarrassed because I actually had a few waters with him on Saturday night. Mm. Me and a couple owners, where we were sharing the best in vintage waters from different years.
San Pellegrino.
I had a great 1973 Boise, but I'll have that locked down a little later. But yeah, just smart as a whip, knows everybody. Couldn't be happier to see our league in his hands. Mm-hmm. And what's really neat about our league, because we got in 2007, right? Or not 2007. We got in, I'm 27 years old.
Yeah, 2010?
Yeah. 2009 is when we bought the team. 2010 is our first game.
Yes.
And as cool as that was, there's a part of me that loves and a part of me that hates, that I don't think you'll ever see somebody buy into the league for what we bought into or not have the backing. Mm. One of the guys I met this weekend who was, and I'm name dropping here, but not really, but because it's making the point for me, had some waters as well with Dennis Crowley. Do you know the name?
No.
Started Foursquare.
Oh, I played Foursquare against him, amusingly.
You played Foursquare?
I played so it was in Austin, Texas in 2012.
Okay.
I was down there for South by Southwest, and this was shortly after Foursquare was really making a name for itself, before it went to Swarm and all those other kind of weird hybrids of it. And we played Foursquare, and I actually knocked him out of the server square one time. I don't think he was too thrilled, but he's D-E-N-Z, I believe, on Twitter.
Yeah, D-E-N-S. Yeah. Just 80,000 followers. But guys like that caliber are
friendly,
like,
guy, too.
Let me bring a team in, and his one of his co-owners is, or one of the guys running the club, I work with him at NBC Sports, so that's cool.
What club is that?
Kingston Stockade.
Oh, okay.
Greg Lawless is involved with that club as well.
Wow.
It's awesome. And you've got Warren Barton, who owns the San Diego Flash. Mm-hmm. Multiple B-sides for NASL clubs.
Yeah, I saw the Indy 11, which will be in your division, I believe.
Yeah, Indiana Fire are now the Indy 11 B.
Okay.
So that'll be a real challenge for us.
Yeah.
I do believe, and don't quote me on this or put it on the internet, which we will later, but
yes, we will.
They have, they will not be like a Cosmos B, where the Cosmos B, they're a professional side. As long as everyone's professional, you're not paying them under the salary cap, you can be a professional team in our league. Mm-hmm. I think Indy 11 B is going to be amateur high end. It won't be, for example, the Cosmos this year, if they needed Haji Wright or John Neeskins to get back into shape, they could send him down for a game because they were a professional side.
And that was part of the problem with Minnesota United, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Sorry. It's too soon still?
Yeah. It's always going to be too soon. It's always going to be too soon. Again,
but it's a serious point, though.
It is. It's a very serious point. Detroit, I was talking to them. They went out and played Minnesota United Reserves last year in Minnesota, and those guys didn't have to travel. So that was their best team. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the standings this year, you're like, how did Detroit play so tight against a team at the bottom? Well, that was Minnesota's best.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about
our league. So that's a good thing then, that what Indy 11 is doing is not so, you know, flexible and tied to what the Indy 11 A team is doing.
Yeah, and they've got a great group. Besides the fact that we'll have to drive out there, I'm very excited about going to Indiana. We will have to play them at home and away, the Indiana Fire and FC Indiana. We will play the Rochester River Dogs. I say that because there's a Z at the end.
I saw today somebody was spelling Rochester with a Z in place of the S.
Yeah, that was clever.
It's like a capital Z, too.
Rochester.
That makes it even weirder to me.
It's a capital Z. And I'm going to stick with saying that for until it gets annoying, which it already is. And, of course, Erie, Fort Pitt, and Cleveland. So we know what we have to do. The top two teams from each division make a four-team Final Four tournament. Mm-hmm. It'll be 1A against 2B and 2A against 2B. So the only way you can meet a team from our side in the final is if we both knock it off. And I think this year is going to be unbelievable, meeting the guys from Ann Arbor, meeting the guys from, you know, even Grand Rapids, who are getting, I want to say, like 5,000 people a game.
What about Kalamazoo, too? I saw they were added.
Yeah, Dayton should be better. Yeah. Kalamazoo would be interesting to see how many players from Western Michigan they get. And obviously, mm-hmm. a bunch of Western Michigan type guys are here at Buffalo. So
yeah,
I just think it's going to be a fantastic year. We're going to try and keep the Rust Belt Derby going and obviously include our game against Cleveland. There have been preliminary discussions about maybe including Rochester in the Derby with Binghamton. Mm. So make it a three-way, much like the Rust Belt Derby. So I think, man, a lot of stuff can happen. It's really exciting time for the league. And as I'll steal it from Dennis as a name drop again, as he tweeted, this was the right time to get into the league. You know, to have the speakers we had, it was a really good week, and I'm fired up. I want to win the whole thing, you know. So we're hard recruiting. I think from the FC Buffalo angle, if people are out there listening and wondering how things are going, is it just going to be turning around and bringing all the guys back? There will be a certain mix, but I think we've been speaking with, in terms of the out-of-town players, a next-level caliber of player, and I'm really, really excited about what we might be able to do. So fingers crossed. But hey, if we do what we've been doing, it should be enough to compete in our conference.
When should FC Buffalo fans expect to have a schedule announced?
We're ready with our dates.
Okay.
I mean, we're ready with the dates we have available. We're waiting on two or three teams. They have about a week to send us their blackout dates, and then the schedule. I don't know when it'll be announced, which is the tricky part.
Right. Okay.
But I do think there's a possibility we'll have the schedule completed even before Christmas. There is a possibility.
Wow.
I would like to get it out there, because then whenever we announce the schedule, we sell like 20 to 25 season tickets that day. So I would like to have it happen tomorrow. by the way, go to fcbuffalo.org / 2016 season tickets. Cheap plug. Yeah.
Very, very affordable.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. We're going to work on a new store. There's going to be a lot of stuff coming out, not just for FC Buffalo, but for the NPSL. There's really a lot to be encouraged about. And congratulations to my co-owner, Scott Fraunhofer, who is serving his second stint on the board of directors now. He was voted into the fold this week.
Yeah, he's actually a frequent guest on the FC Buffalo show from this summer. So.
Yeah, well, he'll be a lot of those guys, and Bobby Roach, our assistant coach. Now that I feel like we're in a good flow now, Ben, before we switch gears to the Premier League, I feel like we're now ready to bring a third voice in. We've got that stabilization. We've got that 5 o'clock Monday time slot here.
I think so, yeah.
WBNY, mm-hmm. So it's time to bring some in-person guests.
Agreed,
And that'll be fun. Anything else about the meetings before we dance onward into Britain?
Well, you answered basically all of the questions that I had prepared without me asking any of them.
Listen, man, I'm a pro.
That was very impressive. I guess the only question that I had is, you explained the playoff setup, but how is it determined who hosts? Best overall record?
Well, it's a little different this year. Best overall record will certainly have every chance to, but you always have a chance to decline hosting.
Okay.
And we want to make sure that this is an event with the fans in our market, in our conference. Buffalo, Detroit has a great fan base.
Yeah.
All of those Michigan teams do. Dayton, I think, will have a pretty strong fan base moving forward. We want to make sure that, with all due respect to the new teams, as they're growing themselves, if the best record is held by someone who can't provide, we want to make sure that every playoff game this year is streamed. There are just demands that have to be in place. So, granted, I can tell our fans that if it's in Buffalo, we can meet all those demands. So if you're Buffalo and you're hoping we get the first seed and we host, I have confidence we'll have a good chance to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
That said, we're going to make sure this is, I mean, let's face it, it's an 80-team league now, right?
And growing.
It's an 80-team league and growing. And so winning your 15 to 25-team conference, that should be a championship in itself that isn't just celebrated as, oh, great, now we get to go to the national tournament. You know, that's the sort of thing that you fly a banner for if you win. So we want to make sure that conference tournament is rightly treated as wonderful as it is. And Detroit did it really well a couple years ago. Last year was it was garbage fire. That's probably not a good thing for me to say, but they're not in our league anymore.
Yeah.
Last year was terrible. To not watch those games was really hard.
Mm-hmm. How big of an emphasis was that at this annual general meeting, streaming games and making them visible for a much wider audience? Was that
for our conference? It was a big deal.
Okay.
You know, to the point where people like Detroit and us were willing to help people get in touch with, you know, the streamers, mm-hmm. So to speak, because you know, when we go, FC Indiana had our game on last year.
Uh-huh.
The Fire did not. I mean, but we are hoping. Last year, Periscope was a very new device. And what I'm hoping is, at the very least, every team can get an intern to just swing their phone for 45 minutes at a time.
I had a lot of bad experiences with NPSL Periscope.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's a little bit more of an investment to have a whole streaming situation. But I thought...
But it's like, not that bad. It's not that hard.
And I thought FC Indiana did a really good job.
They did a fantastic job.
I watched FC Indiana games that had nothing to do with FC Buffalo. And I know part of that was because I was trying to, in some respects, cover the league as a whole last year. I was a contributor to NPSL.
Sure. But think about it this way, Ben. If you're a player now and not... a media member and an interested observer.
I'm not a player.
But yeah, let's say you're a 15-year-old kid and you're playing in, and this is one of the reasons we think it's important for us to have a stream. Mm-hmm. You're a 16-year-old kid in a soccer-rich area, say Indiana, and you're a big fan of the Fire, or I'm sorry, Indy 11B or FC Indiana, and you watch your team all the time, and you're the sort of player who can one day play in our league.
Yeah.
We want you watching FC Buffalo at home because we want you thinking when you end up at Indiana or Butler or hopefully Buffalo, man, I would play for that team. That's impressive. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think it's really important. It's important for fans, but it's important for teams. So if other teams don't want to do it, fine, because it's not good for you. We're going to keep doing it.
And I thought it was a lot better last year than it had been in previous years. I really enjoy watching the Detroit City FC games. I enjoyed watching FC Indiana. It was interesting just watching the commentators kind of find their legs in terms of understanding and analyzing soccer. And it wasn't great at first, but it got increasingly tolerable as the season went along.
Yeah, I think the teams that are in our league now too are the ones who want to do it right, because the tide has risen so much that they're looking around and thinking, look, if I build a fan base, I can be in NASL, I can be in USL.
Uh-huh.
You know, any market. This landscape in the next 20 years is going to be fascinating. We promised some Barclays Premier League talk, the Premiership, as some people like to say. Mm-hmm. And let's get there. I want to start with the Cherries, as I mentioned earlier. That was, and with all due respect to them, and I'm wearing my Bournemouth pin, as I mentioned, from my one-off running into their chairman, Jeff Mostyn. They did. I mean, they deserved it because they won. But Chelsea dominated that game and just couldn't score.
Man, that game was boring to watch.
Yeah.
It was horrible. I love Glenn Murray, though, so that was sort of a redeeming factor. Glenn Murray is just like, he's almost squirrely in that he just produces at vital times, and he's not a guy, if you walked up to Glenn Murray on the street, your last guess would be that he's a professional soccer
player.
Right,
I think I could convince you that, what's his name, from the Wolfpack. The guy who runs the Wolfpack in BDSL looks just like Glenn Murray. Uh-huh. And I'm totally blanking on his name, and I played with them for a year, so I'm embarrassed, but it's a brain fart
Moonen
situation. Yeah, yeah. Adam Saka I'm thinking of, but Chris Moonen runs the team.
Yeah, Adam Saka, different guy.
Adam Saka looks a lot like Glenn Murray, I think, but I haven't looked at a picture of Adam in a while.
I can see it, yeah.
I thought Mourinho kind of screwed himself a little bit when he popped in, took out Hazard. Hazard playing up top. It's not something you want to do all the time, but it was very effective, and he probably could have had two. He's been very good for a couple weeks now, and then when Costa went in and just kind of coasted it up, he's gone.
Is he gone in January?
I think he's gone.
He's gone in January?
Barring a remarkable big goal in the Champions League that puts him right in the right spot.
Back to Spain.
I think the only reason he's playing, I'm just guessing here, but I think the only reason he's playing right now is because Mourinho doesn't want to, you know, he wants to get some money for him. He doesn't want to say this guy's going to languish on our bench. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think it applies to Fabregas too.
Sure.
And I think it's a more difficult decision because I think strikers to some degree are more available. It's a lot easier to get a halfway decent striker than it is to get a really difference making number 10.
Sure.
I don't think those the number 10s really grow on trees.
Or you're even your second striker, your false nine.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys are around. Those guys who can play on the wing can be your second striker.
Yeah,
but your Harry Kanes, your Diego Costas, who are going to just monopolize the back line and demand attention, there aren't a lot of them. Graziano Pelle or Pelle. It always
Pella.
Screws,
Pella.
Yeah, Pella. Yeah, it screws me off because, you know, the best player of all time is Pelé.
Yes.
So that's a challenge for me. It's going to be really interesting moving forward. You mentioned in our pre-show notes what's wrong with Manchester United. And I think there's probably plenty, but this weekend, just that they didn't score. They had the fourth, it's a very difficult stat to say, but they had 21 shots and just one on goal. That is the fourth most shots taken with just one ending up on goal in Premier League history. Anthony, are we going with Martial?
Yeah. I think it's Martial.
Martial. He could have had three in the first half. They should have scored a bunch. And so when you ask me what's wrong with them, I just think they didn't finish. In any other year, like in the Sir Alex Ferguson era, that game happens and you're still in first place and you go, you know what? That was just unlucky.
But it's happening so much.
It is, but not at that level of, I thought they were dominant. Aside from one really bad miss from Mauro Zárate when Andy Carroll knocked the ball down with him. Real classy knockdown. When
really good pronunciation there, too, is Zárate.
Listen, Zárate rhymes with karate. Mm. That's how I remember it.
Huh.
Andy Carroll, when he looks on his game.
Yeah, which is about once in a blue
moon. Once every 10 games.
Yes.
He looks like a guy who should be on England and you should pay the amount of money that Liverpool paid to get him from Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
He's a special player.
He's right in that target striker vein that we were just talking about. There are not many that are very good at it, I guess.
How about this, Ben? Jeff Cameron of Stoke City.
I thought you were going to say Andy Carroll to Chelsea.
No, Andy Carroll to Newcastle, where he'll be terrible and they'll be relegated. I've seen this dance before. no, and I don't think they'll be relegated as well. But
big win.
Big win. Yeah, they looked really decent. When Wijnaldum is going... Wijnaldum,
yes.
Jorginho. Darn near killed him.
Yeah.
when he's going, they're very good. But Stoke City, very interesting. League Cup drawn with a chance to have Cameron go against Tim Howard for a League Cup. And that would be, I don't remember, was Dempsey at Fulham when they took care of business? I don't know. I'm wondering how many Americans have a league or an FA Cup. So. And a note for you fellow Newcastle fans out there, all four of you, shout out to us for again in the FA Cup draw getting a Premier League team in the third round. Like Manchester United is probably going to play the Stock Boys from a supermarket in Dagenham.
They might even play the Bedlington Terriers.
They might play the Bedlington Terriers. Meanwhile, Newcastle gets Watford, so we're out. So another year without a trophy. Really.
That's
awesome.
Too bad. At least you beat Jurgen Klopp.
We did beat Klopp, but it wasn't at the Kop. So I want to be Klopp at the Kop.
Well played there.
That's what I do. A couple announcements. The All West New York High School dinner coming up, not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday. And also, we're going to throw a party to benefit Cradle Beach Camp with our friends, The Invisible Touch, an 80s rock band. I'm not going to tell you. And it's going to be at Resurgence Brewing on Boxing Night, the day after Christmas.
That's Niagara Street.
Very excited about that. It's going to be $30. For 2 hours, as much beer as you want, pizza, massage chairs, rock and roll music, and there
massage
is
massage chairs.
Yeah,
I heard pizza.
There's definitely pizza. There's a very good chance that that some people will get to go up on stage with the band, and sing a song or two.
Oh.
You know, maybe Thunder Road in its entirety. I don't know. That's from the 70s.
Where is Andy Teat?
He's in Akron.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Probably wearing... No, he's not in Akron, New York. Right. I don't know. I'd love to talk to Andy Teat. I wonder how he's doing.
He'd be great on stage, is what I'm saying.
I feel like he'd be great on stage, too. I feel like he might have experience. We will be back next week. Derek Kramer did a great job producing. We didn't let him on the air that much this week. Next week, we'll be talking...
It doesn't help that I have two weirdos over my shoulder right now in Studio A.
No, we're right in front of you. Oh.
Wasn't us.
Disappointing end.
Oof.
Yuff.